There's not much that people see eye to eye on in Washington these days, but everybody agrees Congress has a lot of work to do. The budget, federal pay and benefits, and the traffic disaster of BRAC. Those are just three of the issues Northern Virginia Representative Jerry Connolly is dealing with. He joins us now for an update in our congressional spotlight. Good morning, and thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Great to be with you again.
Okay, so let's start at the very beginning. There's a big plate here. Let's start with BRAC. Now, the House has passed a bill delaying some of the changes to help traffic, you know, in Northern Virginia. So what's your best guess of what this has, the chances of this in the Senate and becoming law?
I think the chances are good. I think there's a growing realization among my colleagues in both bodies that the Mark Center is very problematic at best. That it was a flawed decision by the Army to put it there. Many of us protested that, both when I was chairman of Fairfax and now that I'm in Congress. Unfortunately, they decided that meeting the deadline of September of 2011 was frankly more important than dealing with the intricacies of Northern Virginia congestion. They're now going to pay a price for that, and that's very unfortunate. So are the rest of us. So delaying the implementation is one piece of this. But I think it hopefully it buys us some time for the Army to work through how it's going to get its workforce to that site.
Do you think it's possible that they could change the work site in that year and maybe find a building that has Metro or some other easier access?
I don't know that they're going to just build the building at great cost. So I don't think they're going to abandon plans to use the building, but I think they can look at things like what transportation improvements we do need. We have language in the Defense Authorization Bill that I authored that would allow the Army to actually finance some transportation improvements outside of the base by changing the criteria for what's known as defense access roads. The state's going to be kicking in some money. It gives us some time to implement some of the improvements to ramps at Seminary and I-395. But it also allows the Army to look at staggered work schedules, perhaps a better dispersal of the workforce and not as many go to that site, and for some possible transit options. But frankly, the site to pick is pretty limited in terms of the options made available to us.
I mean, the Empire State Building was built and occupied in 18 months, and they had to tear down the Waldorf Astoria first. Do you think that a ramp could get built in a year? Could anything happen in a year that would help transportation?
Well, the state has got plans to make improvements. I think it's kicking in about $20 million or so, and the Army is putting in some money as well. So it does buy some time for some construction, but again, I wouldn't hold out a lot of hope that even if we could meet an expedited construction schedule, that somehow that's going to solve the problem. It's going to help, but it's not going to solve the whole problem, and that's why I deeply regret that the Army decided to choose this site.
Okay, well, let's move on to some contractor issues, because there have been a lot of rules coming from the White House, from the FAR Council, things affecting the contractors that are in your district. And two I want to mention. There's the 3% tax withholding that the IRS has delayed for 1 year. I think even the administration helped push that one through the stimulus bill. And then there's the political contribution disclosure rule that's been proposed by the White House. What are your industry constituents saying to you about all of this?
Well, I'm a co-sponsor bipartisan legislation to repeal that 3% withholding requirement. By the way, that affects not only contractors, it affects local governments as well in terms of their purchases. And so, it's simply going to hurt small businesses. I don't think when it was adopted that a lot of thought went into the possible consequences of that, especially with a fragile economic recovery. And I think this broad bipartisan support and understanding of the need to tackle this issue. So I'm hopeful that legislation will get a quick hearing in the House Ways and Means Committee and we'll move forward to the 112th Congress.
And what about the political contributions being disclosed that the White House would like? A lot of people are saying that would actually inject politics rather than remove politics from the contracting process.
You know, I think Citizens United goes down as one of the top worst decisions ever made by a United States Supreme Court. It is going to upend our political process. Transparency and sunshine are the great, important ingredients in our politics. Citizens United consciously takes both out of our political process. It's a very damaging development in terms of U.S. Political life. Having said that, I think the disclosure rule that the administration is looking at is well-intentioned, but has unintended consequences. And I can think of two right off the bat. One is that it would suggest when people do participate in the political process financially that perhaps there's some connection between an award of a contract and those contributions, when in fact there is none. Those are not dots to be connected. And I think that, you know, we have to take that very seriously, because that could seriously color the public's, you know, confidence in the award of contracts. Secondly, it also discourages political participation. And I don't know that we want to do that either. I'm for, you know, full disclosure, I think, and full transparency. I think people ought to know who are making contributions. And at the state level in Virginia, that's exactly the system we have, this full disclosure in a timely fashion. And I think that's the greatest, if you will, antiseptic for avoiding corruption or the conflict of interest in politics. But this particular rule may have some unintended consequences we've got to look at very carefully.
And we're speaking with Congressman Jerry Connolly, who represents Virginia's 11th District. Let's move on to the 2012 budget. There have been a lot of hearings on the budget proposals, routine types of hearings, but yet we know we're really bearing down on September 30th pretty quickly. What's your best estimate of what's actually going to happen as the fiscal year winds down?
Well, I'm not confident that the Republicans or the Democrats are going to be able to produce a budget that everybody can live with, and I think we're probably, you know, there's a good probability we're going to go for a second year in a row without a formal budget being adopted. Appropriations bills are moving nonetheless, and of course that's where the real fight is going to be in terms of what investments are made and not made. Budgets are all about values, and quite frankly, I think this Congress is as polarized as any I can remember in terms of values. Should we fund Planned Parenthood or not? Should we fund public broadcasting or not? Should we eviscerate the Environmental Protection Agency in its ability to regulate clean air and clean water or not? Those are fundamental values that need to be debated, and you know, reaching agreement in this very polarized Congress is going to be very difficult. I do think, though, that there's a date that's even maybe more important than September 30th, and that, of course, is the drop-dead date of August 2nd for the debt ceiling extension. And, you know, I voted this week for a clean extension of the debt ceiling. I believe that the responsible members of Congress cannot play chicken with the creditworthiness of the United States of America, which was established in 1783 by then Secretary of Treasury Alexander Hamilton, and has been solid and counted on ever since. And that's going to be a real moment of truth for members of Congress.
And so you're hopeful that some compromise can be reached before that moment of truth?
It must be reached. It must be reached. Otherwise, the consequences are too dire to even contemplate.
All right. Well, we can keep on guessing, but let's move on to the idea of federal pay, benefits, and performance. That seems to be really debated a lot. Pay freeze extension proposals, reducing the federal workforce. Now, we talked about the contractors in your constituency. You have a lot of federal workers also. What are they saying to you? What are you hearing? What's your reaction to what's going on?
You know, I represent, Tom, the third largest number of federal employees in the United States and federal retirees as well. And I think my constituents are sick of the federal worker bashing that's been going on, especially, frankly, on the Republican side of the aisle. I serve on the Oversight and Government Reform Committee, and they've had hearing after hearing after hearing, all skewed, pounding the idea that we need to right-size the federal workforce, and that federal workers are overcompensated, overpaid, their benefits are bloated, they don't work very hard. It's a narrative that we see, frankly, on the other side, sadly, all over the country. With the Wisconsin governor and the Ohio governor and the Florida governor disparaging public employees and the organizations that represent them. And now we're seeing it, of course, at the federal level. And it saddens me because we've always had bipartisan support to support the men and women who serve the country in the federal workforce. And some of my colleagues have lost sight of the nobility of public service. You know, federal workers provide enormous service to the United States. We saw that in FEMA with the tornadoes and in the south. We see it every day on the borders of the United States and protecting us. We see it, you know, we see it with civilian workers who work side by side with our men and women in uniform in Iraq and Afghanistan. And frankly, the, you know, it just sickens me to watch the disparagement and making federal employees and federal workforce a punching bag for someone's political agenda. That's got to stop. There are a number of us who are strong advocates for the federal workers. We're going to continue to speak out. We're going to continue to fight that very alarming trend, especially on the other side of the aisle.
And I just have to ask, you're just a few months into your second term. It was a close election. Given all that we've talked about this morning, are you glad to still be there?
You know, every day is a challenge. I consider it a distinct honor to have the privilege of representing the 11th District and to have, you know, the opportunity to address these very, very important issues. I'm glad I'm there. I hope my constituents are glad I'm there, and I intend to serve for a long time.
Congressman Jerry Connolly represents Virginia's 11th District. Great having you on, as always.
Thank you.